Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
Coming from the 2018 SMRP conference here in Orlando, it is my pleasure to welcome Howard Penrose to the podcast. Welcome, Howard.
Thank you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. So, Howard, those that may not be familiar with you, you are, if I remember correctly, the founder of MotorDoc?
Yes. Yeah. Well, actually, it started as Success by Design in 2001. And then after the economy turned my time doing certain work with companies like General Motors and some others came to an end, and I went and did some other things. I came back in and decided to change the name to MotorDoc, which was actually a nickname that my captain in the Navy gave me back in 1986. I didn't like the term they used for the person who ran the motor repair shop on the aircraft carrier. He started referring to me as the motor doc.
Excellent.
And, in that time I had 38 vessels to worry about.
Wow. Way more than I had to worry about at that time. So what does motor doc do then?
We work primarily on motor-related systems. So that includes consulting and including electrical reliability in general. But people know us for motors primarily, but we're involved in some high-voltage systems as well at the utility scale. Then we also do some field testing. And as of Friday, we announced our partnership with Framatome, a nuclear power company with 40,000 engineers, to release a continuous monitoring electrical signature analysis system.
Excellent. Excellent.
So it's been
exciting times.
20 years in development.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today is about motors. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
More so the maintenance of motors or lack thereof in many organizations. I'm an electrician by trade. Mm-hmm. I did my apprenticeship. I got my 10,000 hours, the whole nine yards. But we didn't learn nothing about motor maintenance.
Oh, yeah.
We learned how to wire them. We learned how they work. We learned three-phase motor theory. We learned that stuff. But nothing about the maintenance of motors. Why does nobody think about motor maintenance?
You mean what we called in the Navy PFM or pure magic?
Sure.
Yes. Primarily because, and I run into this constantly ever since I entered into the career, which I found out later, by the way, just as kind of an aside, I got into electric motors in the Navy because it was my worst subject in school, in A school. And I got out of the Navy, went back to Canada and saw my grandfather, and he headed up the motor rewind department for Westinghouse, Canada, and so did my great-grandfather from 1911. So discovered I had copper in the blood.
Yep.
So moving forward a little bit, the challenge is most people aren't sure what an electric motor is. Is it electrical, meaning does it fall under the purview of the electricians, or is it mechanical and fall under the purview of the mechanics?
Yep.
You've got greasing. And you've got insulation systems. So you've got rotating components, everything else. It's an energy converter.
Yeah.
That's its primary. It's just like a transformer, except you're changing electrical energy to mechanical energy. So most often people aren't sure whose responsibility that machine is. A pump is really easy. That's a mechanical thing, right?
Yeah.
Your switchgear and cabling, that's obviously electrical. But that interface... That's where things get vague. So do you want an electrician greasing a bearing? Not necessarily, unless they've had the training.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yep, it's absolutely.
The base training is not on that kind of maintenance. Do you want a mechanic wiring a motor?
Not unless he's trained.
Not unless he's trained to do it. And depending on the environment you're in, a mechanic may not get that training and vice versa. So it becomes a vague area. And in the worst cases I've seen, it's shared. So the electricians have to go in and do these inspections, and the mechanics go in and do vibration and other things, and they don't communicate very well because the departments are separate for whatever reason. The one time I saw, well, I've seen it work well since, but the first time I saw it work exceptionally well was actually at General Motors when I joined up and worked on a joint task team with UAW and management.
Yep.
And it was the Quality Network Plan Maintenance Programs, where they took all of the mechanical, all the electrical maintainers and everything, and you got put in an office. So you all worked in the same area. The problem they still had, though, was there was no cross-training. So a mechanical person did vibration.
Yep.
An electrical person did insulation testing. Mechanical person or electrical person, depending on who had the training, because they've gotten rid of oilers, right? So would do the lubrication. And of course, all of that was just done as it was done. And I think that's been the biggest challenge, is not understanding who's responsible for it.
I think one of the other things, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of the things that I found in the past is motors are generally pretty reliable to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an out of sight, out of mind type thing. because we were working with servos, for example, in one organization. And we gave all the electricians the training to get on and troubleshoot them through the drives, all that stuff.
Right.
We may have one fail out of a fleet of 100 once every 5-6 years.
Yep.
And the likelihood of the same electrician being on the shift that did it last time was almost non-existent. The training they had 5 years ago, or even 2-3 years ago, they haven't used because it hasn't been failing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they couldn't retain it. So it was almost so reliable that it was to the detriment of keeping up capabilities within the facility.
I agree with that completely. While electric machines, motors in general, we actually in IEEE, we call them electric machines now because they're a generator or a motor is very similar. You use the same insulation systems. The standards are now harmonized, so they're one standard for both and so on. We were seeing, I also design electric motors. Sorry. How better to understand them, right?
Yep.
I've got a machine that operates in a pure vacuum. I've got a machine that operates in a 2,000-degree environment. I've got all these other things. And I was involved in the development of the hybrid John Deere 944 and 644 tractors. It's nothing more fun than going to John Deere to teach them how to build a tractor. I'm sure they just heard that. And then also back in General Motors, which got me into the hybrid vehicle industry, helped with the Volt and the Tahoe, which was the primary thing they had me consult on. In that aspect, we had to calculate and determine risk of failure over a period of time or mileage.
Mm-hmm.
And then even when I in develop regular machines and we calculate insulation life, we talk about that from the base calculations with modern insulation systems in terms of millions of hours. Okay. Oh, hundreds of years.
Yeah.
As a starting point. Then you start adding in the application and what do you do to try to get the machine to last so long? And manufacturers will not tell you, but a general rule of thumb is you shoot for 20 years on a low voltage motor.
Yep.
The larger motors, it's like more towards 40 years. So if I'm looking at one of my favorite 4,500 horsepower synchronous machine, 1,800 RPM, I'm expecting that to survive 30 to 35 years, okay? When it's surviving only 10 years, that's an issue.
Yes.
That means that the machine is acting as an expensive fuse. So is it possible in one salt application, salt mine, we went in and they had machines, DC machines to top it off, failing every 3 months. Through proper application of simple maintenance techniques and situational awareness of the folks that were doing work, like you pull off the lid, you don't let salt fall in the motor, we extended the life beyond 7 years in a salt environment.
Yep.
And then people are telling me, oh, well, you know, the motor's outside. It's not possibly going to last that long. Well, I'm sorry. If I can take a machine that is no better armored than that machine out in a regular environment and it's salt.
Yeah.
There's no reason why you can't get, you know, 15 to 20 years out of a regular motor. What drives the failure? Misalignment and allowing contamination into the machines, not properly, you know, greasing them, and so on and so on.
So you mentioned some of those to extend that life. You did some mm-hmm. simple basic maintenance on motors. What are those things people should be doing on motors then?
Right off the bat. Okay, so if I go with a standard G2.5 balancing on a machine, I only get 10% of the potential life of the bearing. If I bring that down and go with, say, a G1.0, I get 50% of the potential life of the bearing, meaning the laboratory life of the bearing. So the balance right off the bat. So before you even have the machine, making sure that it's balanced. As you know, I used to run a repair shop for somebody. And there, we went ahead and we balanced every machine that came through there. So we took all these motors, including brand new motors, and I went back after the course of a year. 300 plus motors repaired a month. Not a single original balance was within tolerance. And that was G2.5.
Yep.
So motor repair shops will often, a good quality motor repair shop will balance that well within tolerance. So balance number one up front, checking the vibration on a machine when it's installed. Soft foot conditions, because when you twist the motor, you have a lot of magnetic and dynamic effects going on within the machine, and then the alignment, which directly impacts not just the life of the bearing, but I can take measurements before and after and actually tell you that there's a difference in kilowatts, meaning a difference in energy consumption based upon the accuracy of the alignment.
Excellent.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com.
So those steps alone protect you mechanically. From an electrical standpoint, selecting the right motor for the application right off the bat. You do not really want an open drip proof motor here in Florida near a swamp.
Yep.
When you can have a totally enclosed machine that has weep holes in it to allow moisture to escape. So proper application would be the other thing. So right in the very beginning, before you install and during the installation, yep. you can avoid a lot of the problems. Selecting the correct vendor. That's a big one. And what we've learned over the years is that the testing we perform, the electrical testing, I sell test equipment as well, yep. right? And I do that testing. Doesn't tell us a lot of things. It tells us that immediate condition, mm-hmm. but we've been pulling the end shields off of motors, and I've done that my whole career, and looked inside and seen rat's nests of windings on motors that are supposed to be able to be installed on inverters, knowing that those crossed conductors are going to fail. That's going to be your failure. It yep. will, not it might be, it will be your failure point when you take it apart mm-hmm. after it's failed. So understanding all that stuff up front. Now, once you've installed it, you've got a reliable machine if you've paid attention to those things. Then it becomes proper lubrication of the machine.
All right.
And there's those out there who know my opinion on lubrication. Okay, I'm part of the older crowd that was involved in the studies that went on at what's now NIDEC, but U.S. Electric under Austin Bonnet, where I followed his practices, and that was you turn the machine off to put lubrication in, and it had to be a measured amount. I know, as I'm sure you do, most companies will not allow their maintenance to shut down a motor for the about an hour per motor to properly lubricate it, de-energized.
Yep.
That's how long it takes. I believe in ultrasound lubrication as that next step if you have to lubricate it while it's operating.
Okay.
Because what's the number one cause of a bearing failure, which takes your motor out of operation?
Is it
over lubrication? Number two is under.
I was going to say it's either over or under.
Yeah. The two top reasons for bearing failure is over and under greasing. The third is proper lubrication using the correct lubricant. So not just the lubricant for that application, because there's a long list of lubricants, but knowing that you can't use grease of the week.
Yeah. You have a consistent manufacturer type.
Yep. And to one of our clients' surprise, we went in to take a look at a system. They thought they were having a problem with the belt tension. Turns out they had a failing bearing because they didn't realize the motor alone required two different bearing greases, and the fan required a third. So, the pillow block bearings and the fan required a lithium-based grease, and the motors, one was a roller bearing, one was a standard bearing. The Polyrex EM, the standard grease, mm-hmm. went in the opposite drive end bearing, and in the roller bearing, it required something altogether different. So, in trying to keep things efficient, they standardized on a grease.
Yeah.
You know, I could say it's worse to the fact that they had, you know, nameplates all over the thing saying what grease to put in, but a person who's not properly trained doesn't know one grease from another.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's, I think, one of the biggest ones. One of the misnomers in industry is that mechanical failures are number one. Okay, the bearings fail before anything else. We've learned that perception through articles that lead back to an EPRI report from 1983. So when you see the 51% is this and the 49% is that, and you got 10% of that is rotor bars and everything else.
Yep.
That was a study done on utilities on medium voltage motors. What people don't know is there was a series of studies every 10 years done by IEEE starting in 1955. And the 1983 EPRI study was concurrent with the 1985 IEEE study. They still use these. By the way, all of the percentages, all the mean time between failure for all of this stuff is still available in the IEEE Gold Book. The numbers they use today, which we just determined, because I just voted on it just a little bit ago, within the last month, I think, 2 months, are the original 1975 numbers. We're deemed accurate. So through all of our reliability and everything else, we really haven't improved the machines very much, or maintenance on machines very much, as evidenced by the fact that the reliability of an electric machine is the same now as it was in 1975.
Hmm.
Scary, huh?
Yeah. Well, like you said, they're not designing and installing it correctly. And
we're misinforming ourselves.
Yep.
So the studies that were referred to are part of the detail from those studies was much larger. So what they did is they lumped all the bearing stuff, and it's all based upon motor repair. So what's the first thing that happens when I take a ball bearing motor and I send it into a repair shop?
They replace the bearings.
Right. So automatically bearings are number one.
Yep.
When actually there may not have been anything wrong with the bearings. It's a consumable item that's inexpensive to replace as part of an overall overhaul. What's the percentage of motors that are taken out and sent into repair that didn't need anything done in the first place?
Oh, I'm guessing there's probably a few.
Yeah, it's 22% is the average. So about 1 in 5 motors taken out, unless the windings have catastrophically failed and sent into a repair shop, are usually sent in because there's something else going on and they think it's the motor.
Yeah, they didn't bother to explore the VFD drive or the power quality coming in or those sorts of things.
Exactly. And the insulation, you're absolutely right. The insulation system, we went from a standard insulation system that failed a certain way in a VFD to pulse protected wire, meaning it's actually partial discharge resistant wire, in the 1990s when there was a massive influx of VFDs because of the energy policy support for the application mm-hmm. of VFDs. Now we have yet another insulation technology coming out. As a matter of fact, most of your random motors that are purchased right now have nano dielectric wire in it, which lasts longer. The testing for detecting faults in the original wire to the pulse wire, the nano dielectric wire, are all different.
Which is something no one's really taught or talked about.
Well, we do.
But that's why we're having this conversation right now. Because I know doing my electrical apprenticeship, no one ever said the differences. I knew mm-hmm. there was different insulation classes, but that was about the extent of it.
Right.
Different wire and how we got to test them different.
I've had discussions where I've had control companies come in and not understand what they're applying their drive to. And then arguing, well, the insulation fails that way. And it's like, no, that's pre-1990 insulation materials. And that's the other challenge. Like the new, the new IEEE 43 came out in 2013. New, right?
Yep.
In our industry, when I'm dealing with tests that we were performing in industry in the 1910s, I don't know if you know this, but electrical signature analysis, surge comparison testing, everything else. Actually, the concepts for those came up between 1910 and 1920.
Hmm.
It wasn't until much later that we were able to actually perform those tests with stuff that was a little more portable.
Yep.
So they had no idea of what they're actually applying their technology to. So we do protective systems in between to try to save the motor and so on and so on and so on. But what we found is when they don't apply it correctly, failures occur, and you have to actually investigate the motor. Is it the motor?
Yep.
Well, the PD resistant wire, you'd get a pinhole short, and on the VFD, you'd start it up, and I'm sure you ran into this, it would trip,
mm-hmm.
and it would say there was some type of inverter fault.
Yep.
And so you'd start looking at the inverter because when you put it in a bypass, motor would run.
Yeah.
And then eventually you get around to the motor. And then to top it off, seeing as we're talking about the motor system a little bit more, that cabling in between, people would forget there's an insulation system in there. And so those would fail. And nobody would inspect the cable.
Yep. They changed the motor first.
They'd change the motor. They'd do other things. So you would end up with this situation where you're mm-hmm. pulling out machines that there's nothing wrong. You're expending money. Good news is a lot of the newer testing technologies are addressing some of those issues just in time for the new materials.
Excellent. Well, Howard, I've definitely learned a lot more about motors today. What is the one thing you want our listeners to take away from this conversation?
Pay attention to your motors. They drive. They are literally our industrial revolution. They drive everything. When you think that 94% of the energy put into a tube of toothpaste comes through an electric motor or the Mars bars that are in there, then it becomes important to understand the impact that a single electric machine can have on your entire production.
Excellent. Now, where can people find out more about this stuff, you, MotorDoc? Where do they go?
They can go straight to our website, MotorDoc.com. There's our contact information is on there. I also have a library of free papers, not just mine, but others, and some videos on there as well. It's about to go through a major update. No worries. None of that's disappearing.
Perfect.
But I've got to start putting together some stuff for a new technology we've got coming out.
Excellent. Well, looking forward to that technology. I want to thank you for sitting down and talking to us today about electrical motors. I definitely learned some stuff today, and now I got to go do some more reading. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And enjoy the rest of the conference.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.